mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, this spring was among the hottest and wettest on record for much of the Midwest. What, if anything, does that tell us about the summer season ahead? We'll speak with WTOL 11 Chief Meteorologist Chris Vickers. Also this morning, after the latest big oil merger between ConocoPhillips and Marathon, Senator Sherrod Brown is among a group of Democrats calling on the Department of Justice to investigate and prosecute price fixing and collusion in the industry. And we have another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, June 7th, 2024. Did you hear that it looks like it is all but certain that we are going to set a new record in the state of Ohio for the number of tornadoes in a single calendar year? This week, they confirmed tornadoes in Delaware, Knox, Muskingum, and Licking counties. 62 tornadoes have now been confirmed in the state of Ohio since the beginning of the calendar year, and the record number of tornadoes for the state of Ohio in a single calendar year set back in 1992 is 62. That is where we are now. So we have tied the record, and it's only, you know, the first week of June. So all we need is one more to set a new record. The average number of twisters per year in the Buckeye State is 19. So we are well above that. It does say the averages have doubled nearly doubled since the 1990s. And we talked about this, I don't know, several weeks ago, the fact that weather and climate experts have made note of what seems to be a shift in the area referred to as Tornado Alley. So we are more likely to get tornadoes now than we were years ago. And already we have tied a record. Some of the other news of the day. I don't know if you heard about this yesterday. I don't know where we're going to get seafood here in town anymore. Findlay appears to be among several dozen more cities losing their Red Lobster locations. Company has filed for bankruptcy, you know. And if the court approves, the restaurant on Tiffin Avenue would be one of three in Northwest Ohio to close. The others would be on Reynolds Road in Maumee and Monroe Street in Toledo. Other locations on the chopping block around the state include one each in Columbus, Dayton, also Parma, Strongsville, and New Philadelphia. For now, the Red Lobster restaurants in Mansfield and Sandusky would remain open. Those would be the ones closest to us. So, we're a Red Lobster fan. But, of course, Finn's closed, a month or two ago. And so, oh, seafood lovers, I guess go to Captain D's. That's about the only place anymore for seafood here locally. Kind of interesting. By the way, we spoke about tornadoes and storms. We're not the only ones that have experienced strong storms this spring. And in Texas, this past weekend, they set a new record in Texas. You know, everything's bigger in Texas, and now a chunk of ice the size of a pineapple is a record-setting hailstone. The size of a pineapple. It was in the Texas Panhandle this weekend. Storm Chaser, who found it in a farm about an hour south of Amarillo, posted on social media that it was more than 7 inches long, and that's when he found it. I wonder what it was when it actually fell from the sky and hit the ground. It was probably bigger than that, right? Because they do tend to melt. If it is confirmed, the size of this hailstone, that would be a new record in the state of Texas. And it just boggles the mind to think that there might be a larger record somewhere, but it says it would be a state record. The Texas State Climate Extremes Committee is meeting to confirm the size. Hail the size of pineapples. Wow. That is that's scary, isn't it? I mean, you think about that. That is scary. Let's see. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories that you need to know this morning to get your day started. The first recreational marijuana licenses in Ohio are becoming available today. Officials, the state's Division of Cannabis Control, are posting the initial dual-use applications on their website. Those licenses are for the operators of existing medical marijuana dispensaries who want to either convert their businesses for adult recreational sales or sell to both. For both medicinal and recreational purposes, the Division of Cannabis Control has said that they hope to have the first dual-use licenses issued before Independence Day. So, looks like they are on track to have that done. So, let's see. By the way, speaking of medical marijuana, you know, some folks want magic mushrooms to be the next drugs, previously controlled substances, to be legalized. And this at least may help make the case for medical use. A 41-year-old woman has seemingly cured her long COVID symptoms with psychedelics. According to clinical case reports, the patient was struggling with anxiety, joint pain, headaches, and other symptoms after coming down with COVID in 2022. When traditional treatments failed, she began taking MDMA and magic mushrooms. This was with the help of a therapist. She wasn't self-medicating. And since she got on this therapy, her headaches have become less frequent. She's been able to return to work and continue her PhD program. Some researchers believe that psychedelics could reduce inflammation and promote brain plasticity. But the FDA, to this point, has rejected those claims, and they are not interested in legalizing magic mushrooms. But, you know, same thing with medical marijuana. So we'll see. But it was, well, that was kind of interesting, especially on the same day, the story about recreational marijuana licenses in Ohio hits the newswire. I saw that on the wire right there as well. And a couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Are you tired of hearing about Caitlin Clark yet? Here's one more story about the women's basketball phenom. Apparently, Ms. Clark is influencing baby names. A new report from the website Baby Center shows the name Caitlin is up almost 1,600 spots as a girl's name. They track the popularity of girls' names. And Caitlin, with a C, is now much more popular than it used to be. It's up 1,600 spots on the list of popular girls' names. And it doesn't stop there. This, I thought, was interesting. The name Clark is up 15 spots as a boy's name. So how would you like to be a boy finding out sometime years from now that you were named for Caitlin Clark? You know, but yeah, even Clark is getting a bump in baby name popularity. The former Iowa Hawkeyes basketball star, now with the WNBA's Indiana Fever, was selected as the WNBA's Rookie of the Month in May. So, wow. And finally here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. We talked about this a couple of months ago, if memory serves, and now a short list of 10 finalists has been selected for the first AI beauty pageant. The top 10 artificial finalists for the artificial intelligence beauty pageant have been announced. Travel influencer Olivia C. and astronaut Asina Illich are both still in the running to win the FanView World AI Creator Awards. This is the first AI beauty pageant. The co-founder of the awards, Will Will Menange. I'm sure I butcher that name, but the co-founder of the award says this awards program has shown how engaged creators in the AI space are. Let me make sure that I read that properly. The awards have shown how engaged creators in the AI space are, and the standard of the shortlist is nothing short of incredible. The prize pool of $20,000 will be split between the top three contestants. The AI finalists will be judged based on their looks, technology, and social media influence. This is what we've come to in the world today. First AI beauty pageant. Make of that what you will. I just put it out there and let you decide for yourself. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Yesterday, the National Weather Service confirmed a total of 4 tornadoes touched down in Ohio. ONN's Carla Rogner reports from Frazeesburg in Muskingum County, where an EF2 tornado caused damage and injuries.
It was on the ground for at least half a mile. Many homes and businesses had their roof torn off by the tornado. And what made this tornado even scarier is that it came without warning. We talked to neighbors who say they went to bed because the previous tornado warning had expired. About an hour later, they started hearing the tornado make its way into the village.
Ohio's tornado total for the year is now up to 62. Tornadoes were also confirmed in Delaware and Knox counties. In Canton, several community organizations, including the NAACP and the Stark County Urban League, are considering collaboration on an independent oversight commission for the police department. Laura Queso with ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland has the story.
This comes after several recent use of force incidents, one involving Frank Tyson, the other involving an officer deploying a canine on a man who was already on the ground during an arrest. Akron and Cleveland have both established similar groups in the past several years.
Today is the first day of the 3-day 2024 Columbus Arts Festival. The event features more than 250 local and national artists, music and entertainment stages, food vendors, kids' activities, and more. The event is free to attend. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
So as we wrap up the first week of meteorological summer, which began with the arrival of June this past Saturday, WTOL 11 Chief Meteorologist Chris Vickers joins us this morning to talk about what may be in store over the next three months. And Chris, first of all, I know that meteorological summer is based on just the months of the year. June, July, August is pretty simple, as opposed to astronomical summer, which is the time period between the summer solstice and the autumnal equinox. Right. But are those differences like a distinction without a difference?
You know, it's really just a small difference. Basically, from a record-keeping standpoint, we need consistency. So we just define summer as the 3 warmest months climatologically out of the course of the year. It is June, July, and August. Mm-hmm. It beats, you know, trying to figure out when the solstice is happening and if it's, you know, June 20th, 21st, 22nd, because that can vary from season to season and year to year. We need consistent records when we keep things meteorologically speaking. So we just set it, simply put, is the 3 months focused around the warmest point of the year climate-wise.
And speaking of keeping those records, I've been reading an awful lot of stories about how this spring was one of the wettest and warmest on record. Why?
Yeah, well, a lot of that, you know, stemmed from our winter that wasn't, right? We never really had a winter season. So, you know, that fingerprint of just really warm winter weather spilled right into our spring season. The precipitation that we received, you know, the amount of moisture that was in the atmosphere was higher than average due to the warmth that we had. And we kicked things off in a hurry with just an incredibly wet month of April. Many areas saw over 8 inches of precipitation across Northwest Ohio alone in April. It became a little more scattered and sporadic into May. There were still some areas that saw some really wet weather into May, but yes, you know, really incredibly wet weather, but not wet and cool. It was wet and warm.
Yeah.
So, you know, the warmer air has more of a capacity to hold higher levels of atmospheric moisture, which then in turn can lead to higher rain events in the early spring season.
So, and it's not just Northwest Ohio. I mean, much of the Midwest was kind of locked into this same pattern. And as it kind of actually leads to the next question, you were talking about how the conditions of winter spilled over into spring. Does that give us any clues as to what summer may right. bring? Is this a pattern that is going to continue?
You know, generally speaking, you know, seasons or interseasonal connections are not often associated as being directly connected or correlated. You know, what really was driving our winter and our early spring pattern was the very strong, historically strong El Nino event. So now that is fading, and actually fading very rapidly. And our atmosphere over the next 6 to 12 months is going to be undergoing what we expect to be another flux toward the opposite or the opposing force that's been at work. Think of it like a seesaw or a teeter totter. You know, we've been up in one direction and we're going to be headed down in another direction. Now that's globally speaking, with the transition to what we expect to be a La Nina into this summer and then eventually the upcoming winter. So there will be some changes when we see those larger scale shifts. One of the biggest indications that we've seen in those shifts is during a shift from an El Nino to a La Nina, it can be a very active, severe weather season. Mm-hmm. And we have absolutely seen that play out so far this spring season.
Yeah. So that is definitely not what we want to hear with respect to the possibility of additional severe storms. We mentioned the rain. We certainly got an awful lot of that. And really, really warm temperatures. I think, you know, already we've had a half a dozen 90 plus degree days where normally we would have that through the entire year. Any indication or any sense that pattern is going to break with the changes that you see on the horizon in the right. rest of the weather pattern?
Right. You know, the best way to say it is summer's going to be summer. So we're going to get our heat and humidity. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
It's been a little early in some instances this year. We typically actually average about 19 days at 90 degrees or warmer over the course of the year. So yes, we've tallied, you know, a handful, but we do have more that we're going to be expecting. You know, from a climatological standpoint, from a climate change standpoint, we used to historically average closer to about 14 to 15 90 degree days, but within a warmer climate scheme, we now average about 19 to 20. So we will see more 90 degree days. Interestingly enough, last year though, we were only around a dozen 90 degree days or so for the entire year. And that was actually below average. And it may be a little bit of a shock, but you'll have to think back to this one. There were two things that influenced that specifically last summer. One, we actually had a regular frequent precipitation event. So there was a time, you know, in early in the season where it was starting to get dry and we said, ooh, watch out, hang on. But boy, it turned in a hurry and we had regular intervals of rain. You know, people listening across you guys viewing area right now are going to think, yeah, it was a pretty good summer last year, both in terms of, you know, the temperature and precipitation. Mm-hmm. So the regular precipitation kept us away from extreme heat last year. But also, do you remember this? The wildfire smoke.
Right.
That was a factor that really kept several days that we thought might get up into the 90s, more so back into the mid to upper 80s, because, you know, as unfortunate as it is, that wildfire smoke impacts the amount of solar radiation and sun that we receive. So that could be something that holds back some of the greater heat. If that returns again this summer, we will be watching for that. So yes, we're going to get our heat. We'll probably end up somewhere around 15 to 20, 90 degree days, much like we would get on a typical year. I do feel that the summer overall will be a bit warmer than average. A lot of that comes not only in some warmer daytime highs, but we see more extremes in our overnight lows. They just don't get as cool as they used to.
Hmm. One thing I do remember about last summer was that the farmers really felt that it was a pretty good growing season. Again, just the right amount of rain, the right amount of warmth, that it all came in sort of a timely manner. Again, started out maybe a little dry, but really corrected itself, and it was a pretty good growing season. What is sure all did. Of what does all of this mean for the ag industry?
Right, boy, it would be great to get back to back years, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I know it was challenging for the spring season for some of the area farm fields to get planted just due to the amount of wet weather that we had.
Right,
I think we were fortunate in many respects that May for many areas dried up just enough, just in the nick of time. I know it was maybe closer or a little bit more stressful than many would have liked. But looking ahead, we'll be above average this summer. We'll likely be, a couple degrees above average. But I still see a pattern that's going to favor fairly regular precipitation events into our area, similar to last summer. That's been, shown by that transition from an El Nino to a La Nina, that our atmosphere is a little bit more supercharged with energy, or systems that propagate through the jet stream that produce rain events. So like any summer, there's, I think, going to be a few weeks where it gets fairly dry and hot. But, if we could avoid the extended dry periods and kind of break it up with some regular frequent rainfall, yeah, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
I'll knock wood. And any indication, is there any way to predict how long this new cycle is going to last? You talk about transitioning from El Nino to La Nina. Any way of predicting how long that cycle will last once it's here?
That's a very key question, because the transition to La Nina, this could go 12 to 18 months. So it typically has what we would call weaker influences during the summer and early fall season, but more significant influences into the winter season. Mm. So I know it's going to be the million-dollar question once we enjoy this beautiful summer weather that we're going to have.
Right.
What would that mean for the winter season? Mm-hmm. If it would stay a stronger La Nina, that would favor colder and more active weather into the upcoming winter season. So right, those that feel that they got maybe Delta, the short end of the deal this past winter, and I know it's not everybody, some people loved the mild weather, but you know what, Chris, there are snow lovers here in Northwest Ohio that would have loved to have seen more snow.
That's right.
Me being one of them, in early tease ahead, and we're talking about this in June, I get it. But the winter ahead could return to more typical winter so conditions, for sure.
That may be the price we pay for a really right, nice summer. Hey, one other, while we've got you here, also want to mention, or just real quickly ask you about this. I have read a couple of stories about the possibility of another visit for the Northern Lights this coming weekend, or sometime here in the next couple of weeks, more solar storms that may give us conditions for more viewings of the Northern Lights. Any sense as to the likelihood of that?
We're entering a portion of the solar cycle where between now and 2025, we're going to be headed through what's been an incredible solar maximum. So not just this summer, but this fall, winter, and into next year are really going to be the peak of an 11-year cycle. So
wow,
look forward to great things, hopefully to continue. As far as a shorter-term scale on that, the similar region on the sun that produced the incredible and just magnificent displays of the Northern Lights back in May is now Earth facing now again here in early June. So there is some talk that things will become more active this weekend and into early next week. We still really only typically have a good handle on this 24 to 48 hours out,
okay,
when we actually detect more active solar activity that we can actually nail down what we would specifically be expecting. But bottom line is, yes, things are looking more favorable, not only in the short term, but in the long term through the rest of this okay, year and into 2025.
All right, so keep the cameras handy. Again, WTOL 11 Chief Meteorologist Chris Vickers with us this morning. Talk about what may be in store weather-wise as we head into the summer season. Chris, thanks very much.
I appreciate being with you guys this morning. Have a wonderful weekend.
So this is a bit of a long story here, but it's an important story, so kind of bear with me. There have been, over the past couple of years, a number of big mergers and acquisitions in the oil industry, and now a coalition of Democratic lawmakers on Capitol Hill have called on the Justice Department to investigate allegations of antitrust behavior against big oil and The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC. This is a report from the Competition Policy International Organization, CPI, in a letter addressed to Attorney General Merrick Garland earlier this week. Members of the House of Representatives have pointed to ExxonMobil and Chevron, the two largest U.S. oil companies, of conspiring to keep fuel prices high, thereby inflating their profits at the expense of American consumers. The request for an investigation was spurred by an FTC complaint filed last month that accused the former CEO of Pioneer Resources of orchestrating a scheme to coordinate pricing between oil companies in the U.S. and foreign producers. In the letter, it says, quote, "Major oil producers appear to be colluding with each other and foreign cartels to keep prices high, padding their profits at the expense of American consumers. They urge the Justice Department to leverage its full authority to investigate and, if necessary, prosecute such conduct." The letter goes on to say that rather than passing on their profits to consumers through reduced prices, oil companies have been profiteering by maintaining high fuel prices artificially. It says, and I'm quoting here, "Apparently, instead of passing those profits through to consumers in the form of cheaper products, the oil giants have been lining their own pockets while conspiring to keep prices high." Now, last week, when the big merger, the latest big merger between ConocoPhillips and Marathon Oil, again, not Marathon Petroleum, but the merger between ConocoPhillips and Marathon was announced, Senator Sherrod Brown joined the chorus of those many Democrats on Capitol Hill calling on the DOJ to investigate and prosecute price fixing and collusion within the industry. And yesterday, we spoke to Senator Brown about his thoughts on this issue. There has been a wave of mergers in the energy industry of late, most recently the ConocoPhillips buyout of Marathon Oil that was announced last week. You are among a group of Democrats in Congress that have called on the Department of Justice to investigate and take action against oil companies accusing them of price fixing. Based on what? Is it by simply by virtue of the mergers themselves, or do you have evidence that there is collusion happening?
Now, there is. It's an old story, and it's we've seen it in the past. We've seen American politicians playing ball with the American oil industry, playing ball with the Saudi princes to fix prices. Now it's the Saudi princes working with a couple of oil executives. We believe colluded with OPEC officials to raise prices at the pump. What we know is this price fixing would add $500 a year per car to the cost for American families. If you have two cars, you're paying $1,000 more a year for gas. Gas prices are always a challenge anyway. It's a little bit like when you go to a grocery store in Fenley, or you go to a grocery store in Genera, or you go to a grocery store in Fostoria, you're paying more for your groceries because executives, executive bonuses, executive compensation, executive stock buyback. So as my bill would help address that, we're pushing the Justice Department to use the powers of the American legal system to stop them from cheating.
You talk about how these mergers often trigger executive bonuses and stock buybacks and so on, but reducing costs and streamlining operations with the goal of increasing corporate profits is what any smart company would do. That doesn't make it illegal.
It's criminal when these companies, when you have a small, I mean, the free enterprise works because there are, you know, in Fenley, there are lots of stores selling lots of products. They compete with each other. With all these oil company mergers and, you know, losing, if that happens, the iconic Marathon Oil in Fenley, what that means, when you see fewer and fewer sellers, and then you see a foreign interest like the Saudi princes who might be interested in affecting an election in our country, might mostly just interested in their own, padding their own pockets, but they make billions of dollars because they are able to too often manipulate the market. So we want the Justice Department to look at that. We want them, it may be a cease and desist order, it may be criminal. I'm not a lawyer, I don't make that call, but I want them to look at that and see what that means for motorists all over this country. When, and especially in Ohio, what they have to pay because oil profits keep going up and up and up. And whether it's collusion, whether it's some other illegal action, whether it's a cease and desist from the Justice Department or actually a criminal indictment, it's going to be up to them. But I want them to look at this because American motors get screwed and too many motors get screwed in too many cases.
Some would argue, in fact, many Democrats would argue, that the best way to loosen the grip of big oil on consumers would be to continue incentivizing people to embrace alternative energy. And yet, you recently also urged the Biden administration to tighten restrictions on tax incentives that are aimed at encouraging people to purchase electric vehicles. Isn't that counterproductive to the ultimate goal?
No, I want to make sure that electric vehicles. I don't care what people drive. My wife and I drive a car made by some people probably listening in this station. We drive Jeep Cherokees made by union workers in Toledo. It's an internal combustion engine. I don't care what people drive. That's what we've chosen. I just want these jobs, whether they're electric vehicles, incentivized. I mean, don't think we haven't incentivized other kinds of vehicles and other kinds of energy uses in this country. A big part of this is fighting the Chinese on cheating on electric vehicles. We know how they want to flood the U.S. market with underpriced cars because they subsidize putting Americans out of work. So to me, it's giving people the choice, whatever they want to drive. It's making sure that we keep the Chinese from cheating. I've called on the administration to keep these electric vehicles, literally ban Chinese electric vehicles, because in addition to jobs, they're a national security threat because of the technology these vehicles have. If they can gather people's private data, private information, it's a violation of, it's a freedom issue, violation of privacy. It's also a potential national security issue in terms of them gathering information of national security kind of information if they're in the vicinity of the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base or the Toledo Air Station, any of those kinds of things.
We will leave it there for now. Again, Senator Sherrod Brown with us this morning. Ms. Brown, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Can I talk about one other thing briefly?
Absolutely.
Marcy Kaptur and I and some others are pushing the Hall of Fame to put on the ballot Dummy Hoy, who was a deaf baseball player. He died at the age of 99 a few years ago. He was born in Hauktown, Ohio, which is a tiny little crossroads in Hancock County, and we think he should be considered in the Hall of Fame. Not as important as what car you drive, not as important as oil company prices, but matters to people in Northwest Ohio.
And long overdue, many people would argue. Senator, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. Always. Thanks, buddy.
Our conversation yesterday with Senator Sherrod Brown, and you can learn more at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. It is a big weekend around the community, beginning tonight with the summer kickoff festival known as Boogie on the Block. This has been going on for years, originally presented by the Arts Partnership of Hancock County, and then several years ago when they merged with the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, the MCPA has kind of picked up the baton and run with it. And they held it on Broadway for a while and then on Main Street. Now it is held in the parking lot of the MCPA downtown. Earlier this week, Executive Director Heather Clough dropped by the studio to give us a preview.
We got some great country music, food trucks, beer tent, of course. And yeah, it's a great kickoff to the summer.
Now, this is right there at the Marathon Center parking lot,
yeah,
right?
So I think this will be the third year that we moved it from Main Street to our parking lot, because we have this great big space. And, you know, I think people appreciate it if we don't shut down Main Street.
So tickets are available at the door beginning at 6 p.m.
Yes, the gates open at 6.
All right. So circle that on the calendar, because it is a big event and a big fundraiser. fundraiser for the Marathon Center.
Yeah, so it supports our what I call our mission-based programs. So mm-hmm. not the big shows and the shiny stuff that we do, right. but our education program, our free concert series that we'll talk about in a little bit, I mm-hmm. think, and all of those non-profit-y things that yeah. we do.
Yeah, so it is definitely for a good cause. You mentioned the concert series, got a couple of outdoor concert series. Once again this year, the Civic Concert Series gets underway here in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, June 19th, we kick off with the Fostoria Community Band, and those are every, oh goodness, they're Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
I'm like, which day are they? Every Wednesday, starting June 19th through July 24th at 7 p.m., hosted by you, of course.
I will be
Thank
there.
You.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they feature, you know, we have the Civic Band from Findlay, Night Jazz, we have a low brass collective this year from Northwest Ohio.
Okay.
And a barbershop course.
Okay. So, again, Wednesdays begins June 19th, runs through the end of July. Also happening at Riverside Park over at the Waterfall Pavilion, the Lunchtime Live series is back.
Yes. And we've added this year. So we start July 5th, 9th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then they run Tuesdays. Those are 11:30 to 1:30 or 1-ish. And they're running every Tuesday through August 27th.
Okay.
And they feature local musicians. So Jason Wagner is usually there. So people that you've seen around town, and they're going to be playing at the band, not the band show, but the pavilion.
Waterfall Pavilion. So a great opportunity to come out and enjoy a little music at lunchtime.
It is.
Have a great lunch in the park with some live music.
Yeah. We get families. Perfect. We get groups of seniors. Yeah. We get all sorts of people out there just to enjoy the music.
And again, more information about all of this at the Marathon Center website.
Yes, so. mcpa.org.
And let's again circle back to where we started. First big event of the summer is going to be Boogie on the Block, Boogie. And that is
Friday. Gates open at 6.
All right. And again, it would not be possible to do all of those other things, those other community events, without fundraisers like Boogie on the Block. So we'll see you downtown tonight. And then on Sunday, the fun continues as the Hancock Historical Museum is celebrating the 50th anniversary of Findlay's official designation as Flag City, USA. And director Sarah Foltz dropped by the studio with details on that. A big celebration in honor of the anniversary of the title that really has become synonymous with Findlay's identity.
Yes. You see businesses. We have Flag City named
Flag
business.
Flag City, USA.
Yeah. And it's amazing how much our community has really taken ownership and pride in that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a much before 50 years ago that the legacy started,
mm-hmm.
When John B. Cook started really pushing hard to have flags in every establishment, in every yard, and they wanted to keep that legacy alive by deeming us officially Flag City.
Officially,
USA.
But that official designation just 50 years. Yeah. I was surprised by that. For those that don't know, as you said, the history actually goes back. It predates the official designation. For those that aren't aware, what is the backstory and how did this all come to pass?
I'm glad you asked that because there's still a common misconception in our community that, oh, Findlay must have had a huge flag manufacturing company,
even
right?
Today, yes. If you mention this to people, you know, near and far, that's the first thing that they assume.
Right, and understandably so.
Not the case.
But thankfully, Tennyson Geyer, and in collaboration with the Women's Chamber, Women's Division of the Chamber, really kept this legacy alive, like I said, when they decided it was just an amazing movement to show our patriotism mm-hmm. and encourage all community members to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And they really wanted to keep that legacy alive. So when they officially deemed us Flag City USA, that was the hope. And I think it is still prominent today. And when you hit a milestone, like 50 years since that official title mm-hmm. designation, it's a reason to celebrate and also reflect on how far our community has come and really just bring us back together and be united and say, you know what, we are Flag City USA.
Yeah.
How can we celebrate this?
Yeah. Yep. Sunday.
Yep.
Okay.
Sunday, June 9th.
Okay.
Yes. We have a big family-friendly event. This is completely free to the public thanks to the Community Foundation's Fund for All community series mm-hmm. of free events. And we wanted to make sure that this was an opportunity for, if you don't already know, to learn why we are Flag City USA. And there's a lot more tidbits of information in addition to how the flag has evolved. We do tend to celebrate in Findlay around Flag Day, which is June 14th. So we're choosing Sunday, this coming Sunday, 1 to 4 p.m. to bring people together. Campus will be open, tons of activities. Great for the kids because they'll enjoy a free snow cone. We'll have red, white, and blue snow cones. We will have a massive...
Just wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Let me jump in there. Can the grown-ups get the snow cones too?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Just want to make sure.
Absolutely.
So I want a snow cone.
Everyone in attendance will get a free snow cone. And in addition to, children will go home with a free book while supplies last. There's a mobile MASA museum exhibit. We are going to do a presentation with Dave Haas about flag etiquette and proper disposal.
Very important.
And I think that's a really good opportunity as well. Even if you aren't interested in the activities per se, we are a collection site that day for any unused or damaged flags, and we will make sure those get retired properly.
Terrific. It really is fascinating, the history. If you don't know it, this is an opportunity to learn more about how that designation came to be.
Yes, 1 to 4 on Sunday, completely free to attend. Great for the whole family.
So a big weekend, starting with Boogie on the Block tonight. The Marathon Center for the Performing Arts out there in the parking lot, live music, libations, and lots of food. And then, of course, back again to the downtown area at the Historical Museum on Sunday for the 50th anniversary of Findlay's official designation as Flag City USA. We see you out there this weekend.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
As we say, sometimes you don't have to go very far for the broken news. A misunderstanding appears to be behind the unexpected demolition of a playground at a popular park in Columbus. A misunderstanding behind the unexpected demolition of a playground at a popular park in Columbus. A spokesperson for the city's Recreation and Parks Department says workers for a construction contractor tore down the playground at Wineland Park by mistake. That's a big oops. That is a big oops. The crew was working in the playground of a neighboring preschool, and some sort of confusion led to the playground in the park being taken down as well, according to the city official. How does that happen? If you are taking down a playground at a school, what would possess you to go, across the street or next door to the to the public park? The rec department says the contractor is taking full responsibility for the error and is planning to rebuild the playground sometime in the coming months. So they're going to make it right, but somebody's got some splaining to do. How would you like to be the employee who said, okay, go over there and tear that playground down too? Man, that's an oops right there. Elsewhere in the broken news, you remember the story we had, was it last week or maybe it was the week before? I know we talked about this not long ago. The guy in Michigan, Corey Harris, who became a viral celebrity of sorts when he attended a court hearing via Zoom from behind the wheel of his car. And you remember this story? He logged on the Zoom court hearing, the virtual court hearing, while he was behind the wheel of his car. The irony being, the court hearing was for a charge of driving on a suspended license. You remember the story, right? Well, there is a follow-up here with a new twist to the story. While Mr. Harris has claimed that he did not know that his license was suspended, it turns out that he's never had a license at all. Ever. He's never had a license. Not only in the state of Michigan, but any of the other 49 states or commonwealths in the United States. He's never had a license at all. The county district court judge says apparently when he was 19, he applied for his first Michigan ID, but not a driver's license. His driving privileges were suspended in 2010 due to unpaid child support, and a judge lifted the suspension in 2022, which may be why he thought that he was licensed to drive. But because his license was suspended for a non-traffic violation, the court just said, okay, we're going to suspend your driving privileges without actually checking to see if he had driving privileges in the first place. And revoking his driving privileges in this case meant that his privilege to apply for a license or obtain a license was restricted. Not in this case, the license itself. So he's never had a driver's license at all. That story just keeps getting better and better. Let's see. In other broken news this morning, speaking of driving and interesting happenings behind the wheel, a Utah woman says that she was still able to walk down the aisle a day after she was tossed from a mattress in a pickup truck. Let me repeat that opening line there, that story. A Utah woman says she was still able to walk down the aisle just a day after she was tossed from a mattress in a pickup truck. Lydia Kessinger and her now husband, Alex, were apparently trying to transport a king-size mattress to their new home the day before their wedding. And if you've ever tried to transport a mattress in the bed of a truck, you know, the wind can grab that, and you don't want it to fly out on the highway. The truck was traveling at about 50 miles per hour when the mattress shifted, propelling the woman into the middle of the road. She was apparently trying to hold it down while they were transporting the mattress. Luckily, says she was able to get out of the way of oncoming traffic, but she sustained road rash and some chipped teeth. She was still able to walk down the aisle and get married the next day. I'm just going to throw this out here. Next time, hire a moving company. Just saying. Just saying. Oh, my. You know how they say no good deed goes unpunished? This from the international file. A man in Algeria, Mohamed Ramzi, has been sentenced to 2 months in jail for hugging random people on the street. Mr. Ramzi recorded a video in which he called it a social experiment. He would just go up to random people and give them a hug on the street. He said he was just trying to spread peace and love. But the video sparked outrage and he was accused of indecent behavior. He apologized in court and claimed he meant no harm, but he was still sentenced to 2 months in jail and a fine of 5 million dinars, or about $37,000 American. It seemed like a good idea at the time. You go and give people a hug. People need a hug. We need to spread love. Apparently they didn't appreciate it, and the folks in Algeria take this very seriously. No good deed goes unpunished. This is travel season. You don't want this to happen to you. A Spirit Airlines passenger tracked her missing luggage to an airport employee's house. Paula Garcia had a flight March 3rd out of Fort Lauderdale. The flight got canceled, and she was instructed to pick up her luggage. However, the bag containing her MacBook, her iPad, and her Apple Watch never turned up. She pinged her devices and visited the location that came back and then called 911. Apparently, a store employee at the airport, Junior Bazil, resided at the location. The employee has since been terminated. You know, again, sounded like a good idea at the time. Oh, we got a bag here. I can just take this. No, you can track those things now. All those electronic devices. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is the viral video of the day. If you haven't seen this, it's been making the rounds. 2-year-old Paisley Toten was picked up by a giraffe at a Texas safari park on Saturday, this past weekend. Fortunately, she was not harmed. She was not harmed in the incident. The family took their kids to Fossil Rim Wildlife Center. Mother and daughter were in the bed of the pickup truck as they were making their way through the safari, you know, the car safari wildlife park. You know these things. They've got one up in Sandusky and so on. Similar idea. So anyway, mom and daughter were in the bed of the truck when a giraffe dropped down and picked the child up by her shirt. Dad Jason said, "My heart stopped. My stomach dropped." Fortunately, the giraffe dropped the girl into her mother's arms. Shortly thereafter, the parents bought Paisley two items from the gift shop after, because as Jason said, quote, "We figured she deserved it." Yes. Again, thank goodness little girl was not harmed. And this the video of the incident has gone viral on social media. The giraffe just picking up the girl out of the back of the pickup truck. Wow. I guess let that be a lesson to you. You don't go through the wildlife park, safari wildlife park, in the back of an open air pickup truck or with the sunroof open or something like that on your car or in a convertible. Something like that. Yeah. Close the windows. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Do you believe in true love? New survey finds that 70% of Americans, this is a survey of 2,000 adults, 70% of Americans still believe in true love. And, probably not surprisingly, those who are married are even more likely to believe in the concept. 64% of singles believe that believe in the one, that there is the one out there for them somewhere. 64%. 21% of those who say they believe in true love have yet to experience it for themselves, they say. However, not everyone who believes in true love is making it a priority. Only 30% of those who do not think that they are with the one are actively looking for their other half. Only 30%. And here's an eyebrow raiser. 10% of married couples, 1 in 10, say they have experienced true love, but not with their current partner. 1 in 10. Say, yeah, I believe in true love, but not with my current partner. Wow. I wonder if any of those people were standing next to their spouse when they said that. By the way, this is the one thing, it appears, that we agree on across political differences. This is the one thing that we can all agree on that brings us together politically. 74% of Democrats believe in true love. 71% of Republicans believe in true love. So pretty close. 65% of independents believe in the one. And in a related survey, or I think it's a related survey, because you know that old saying, love means never having to say you're sorry. In a separate survey of more than 16,000 U.S. adults, they asked, do you think that other people say that they are sorry too often, about the right amount, not often enough, or not sure? Do you think that other people say that they are sorry? 46% said that other people do not say they are sorry often enough. 46%. 27% say other people say they are sorry about often enough, about the right amount, 27%. And 14% say they apologize too often. On the other hand, they also asked these same 16,000 people, Do you think that you say you are sorry too often, about the right amount, or not often enough? And 57% said that they believe that they say they are sorry about the right amount. 57%. And 24% said that they say they are sorry too often. Just 11% say they believe they say, I'm sorry, not often enough. So you see the pattern there? We think that other people don't apologize often enough, but we apologize the right amount. Again, I don't know how it relates necessarily to the true love survey, but they do seem to kind of go hand in hand. Know what I mean? My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio. It is time once again for another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen to wrap up the week. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, this actually, this is an oldie but a goodie list here.
Yes.
These are recipes that we've actually featured on the program before. But
yeah.
You may not remember because it's been quite a while ago. Like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and these were one of my favorites, and they're easy. So,
and we all like easy.
We do.
We all like
and
easy.
And I love coleslaw, so.
Okay.
That's the second one that goes on top of the chicken tacos. Right,
that's just very random.
Yes.
So this is the theme today.
I'm a random person
this
today.
This is the theme today. I like coleslaw.
I do like coleslaw.
These are recipes, first of all, for chicken crock pot tacos.
Yes.
Crock pot tacos.
Yes. So this is 4 boneless chicken breasts, 1 10-ounce can of diced tomatoes with green chilies, 1 onion sliced into strips. And then for your sauce, you have a 1/2 cup of chicken broth, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, dash of cayenne, 2 tablespoons of honey, and 3 tablespoons of dried cilantro. So in the base of your 6-quart slow cooker, I sprayed mine a little bit, and then I placed my chicken breast, my corn, and my tomatoes, and my onions in there, all sliced up. Then using a whisk or a blender, blend the sauce ingredients, pour that over your crock pot, your stuff in your crock pot,
mm-hmm.
cover and cook on low for 4 to 5 hours until chicken is cooked through. Then shred your chicken up and then serve in tortillas topped with your favorite toppings or the coleslaw recipe below.
Okay. So, really easy to do.
Really easy.
Chicken crockpot tacos, and then the Mexican coleslaw for those tacos. And this is the one that you really like.
This is I love this coleslaw. This
Mexican
is like,
coleslaw.
Yes, it's one of my favorite. I
coleslaw
like coleslaw
with a kick.
Yes, yes, right. And that's pretty much what it is. So, 2 cups of green cabbage finely sliced, 2 cups of red cabbage finely sliced, 2 tablespoons of dried cilantro, 1/2 a red onion chopped, 1/4 teaspoon of chili powder, 1 dash of cayenne. So that's your little bit of heat. And so, if you want to make it more heat, then add a little bit more cayenne. I'm kind of in the middle. So then your cilantro dry.
Keeping in mind, just to interject, keeping in mind that you also have the cayenne in the taco sauce.
Right.
So just something to keep in mind there.
Yes. So then your cilantro lime salad dressing, which you can get pretty much Meijer, Walmart, they all have it. So mm-hmm. different brands.
Okay.
Mix all your ingredients together in a bowl. Toss well. To coat, store in an airtight container. Refrigerate until ready to serve.
Just real simple.
Yep. And if you give it, the more time you give it, the more flavor goes through.
Right.
So you can do this 24 hours in advance if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you're still going to have really good flavor.
Yeah. So the Mexican coleslaw to put on your chicken crockpot tacos. And then this is the one that I really like. And this is a recipe for frozen hot chocolate.
Yes.
We're not in hot chocolate season anymore. I can hear people saying, what are you talking about? Hot chocolate.
Yeah.
This is frozen hot chocolate.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is 1 cup of heavy cream, 1 cup of whole milk, 3/4 cup of hot chocolate powder mix, your favorite. a quarter cup of chocolate syrup, a quarter cup of powdered sugar, 5 cubes of ice, and whipped cream for your topping. You can just get the spray can, or you can make your own, however you want to do it. So add the first 5 ingredients into a blender and pulse until blended to your desired consistency. With the heavy whipping cream being in there, the longer you whip it, the thicker it's going to get. Okay. So if you want it to be more of a smooth, then don't whip it quite as long. If you want it more whippy and more creamy,
more then, frothy.
Yes, then whip it a little bit longer. Okay. So the longer you whip, the thicker it will get. Pour equally into 4 glasses, top with whipped cream, and sprinkle if you desire. Or what I did was I added mini chocolate chips.
Okay. All right.
I like that.
That'll work.
And then serve immediately.
There you go. So, and here's what I'm thinking. You could serve the frozen hot chocolate maybe with some fried ice cream.
Oh.
That would be good.
Really yeah. good.
So, there you go. With the frozen hot chocolate, the Mexican coleslaw for your tacos, and the chicken crock pot tacos.
Yes.
Those recipes, again, I think we had those, what you were saying, back in 2022.
Yeah, so 2022. Those were about this, some of the almost earliest, the same time, maybe a little bit later in
some
June.
Some of the earlier...
This was one of the earlier recipes that was one of my favorites and so easy and
nothing wrong with
bringing
those.
Still can do in the summertime because you do it in the crock pot so you're not heating up your house.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, very good point. Yes. So, and then, of course, the frozen treats there, too.
Yes, at the end.
We've got the recipes posted on our Facebook page, or actually on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, I should say. At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook is where you find us there. And if you, maybe spice that up with your own special...
If you change something, add something up, let me know.
Yeah. Post that on the, you can reply to the recipes there with your own suggestions.
I was just thinking with the frozen hot chocolate, you could spice it up and put some Kahlua in it if it's... If you're not giving it to the kids.
Just make sure you know who gets what mug.
Correct. Because the alcohol will not burn off on this.
Yeah. Also, if you have something that you're looking for, if you have a recipe you're looking for, if you have a favorite recipe that you would like to share, we'd love to hear about it as well. Again, you can share it on the Facebook page at Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN on Facebook. Follow the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page. You can share your recipes there. You can message Kyra directly with those recipes or your thoughts on the recipes. You can also email us goodmornings@wfin.com is how you do that. So, again, go to goodmornings.net for the link to all of the recipes from Kyra's Kitchen today. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, of course, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Check us out online coming up on Monday morning. Diversity and inclusion programs have been a lightning rod of controversy, but if you can see past the politics, new research finds it can have a positive impact on your business. We'll explain. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out, make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.